Yeah, that was Five, Singing Land, one of my old theme songs, and still current, still topical, and still coming out over the airwaves at you. Hi again, you're tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM. You can also catch us on the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org. You'll find a web address to go to, tune in case you want to catch the actual show on the stream. Call-in number here is 831-427-3772, 427-3772, in case you want to join the show. Have your own thoughts, updates, news reports. Breaking news is always welcome. You're welcome to call in at any point to do that, not just during my show, but during anyone's show. So, I'm going to start rolling into tapes pretty quickly. I had hoped to have Jack Smith on the air today. Jack Smith is a property owner and a longtime Felton resident who was essentially dumped from his house and has had a continuing conflict with the sheriff's department, particularly a guy called Deputy Ross. I've had him in the studio before some time ago. He's been brought up frequently on drug charges, but I'm not aware that he's ever been convicted, though there is a case of a possible plea he did last summer, and I wanted to talk to him and his attorney. He's suing, apparently, the county, according to his friend Angel, but I want to get more information on that, and if I can ever, if Angel can ever actually get into the studio. She seems to have trouble doing that. She's high on enthusiasm and low on follow-through, so we'll see if she's able to get that done at some point. Lots happening. An hour or two before the show, I got a call from a guy called Gabriel, who may well be listening to the show now. He's a student at Cabrillo College, formerly homeless, been housed for 3 years, says he's working regularly. And he was set upon by anti-homeless vigilantes near Cabrillo College yesterday around noon by his account. I'm going to be posting something about that on Santa Cruz Indie Bay, indiebay.org, Santa Cruz Indie Media, actually. And people can look that up if they want. I recommend that people go there to check a number of stories because that's a place where I regularly post. I also regularly post on Huff Santa Cruz, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, huffsantacruz.org. And you can get on the Huff email list by going to that website and following instructions. And, you know, then you'll get a slew of Huff emails, some of which you might like, others you might find, who knows. Even more exciting. Let's be positive about this. Call-in number here is 427-3772, 427-3772. I'm going to begin sort of where I left off on Sunday. I do a longer show on Sunday, as regular listeners surely know, in which I had some of the activists who I call the visible sleepers and who I've written about on Santa Cruz Indie Media, who stayed for 4 days, I should say actually 4 nights, on the sidewalk near the main post office in downtown Santa Cruz after, by their report, being harassed repeatedly in the Poganip, and they decided it was time to take a stand both for themselves and also, as they described it, for the rights of other Santa Cruz folks who either choose or need to sleep outside and don't damage the land, aren't engaging in any abusive behavior, but are simply being harassed under a growing wave of bigotry against homeless people. And that they stayed there for 4 nights, and they've some of them are still in town, some of them have left. I'm not sure what their new plans are. They didn't show up at the Huff meeting on Wednesday, although I did speak with one of them, Andrew, and I interviewed some of them on Sunday morning before the show, and I'm going to play that now. So that kind of picking up from that Sunday, I believe Sunday night was the last night they stayed. They stayed Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night, and Saturday night. I should say Sunday morning was the last night they stayed. And out there at the town clock, I should say across from the town clock at the post office. Let's hear some of the discussion, and maybe, who knows, maybe you'll feel impelled out there to join in and give a call at 427-3772. Have you been having trouble if you've been sleeping outside? Or if you're a housed person, what's your opinion about all this? There was a big forum last night with around 200 people, more than over 100, as the Sentinel described as over 100. I went to it for part of it anyway, and I counted like 170 at one point. Here you go. So here we, let's hear some of this discussion on the sidewalk in the wee hours of the, well, not, well, 7 o'clock in the morning. And maybe some of your thoughts. 427-3772 is the call-in number.
Well, it's 7:07 on April 21st, a brisk Sunday morning. I'm down here at the Pacific and Water Street intersection, looking at this large cement circle, 40 feet in diameter, with little 8 posts around it, and apparently 3 sleepers, 1 coffee-drinking walker, and 2 pooches are here. Would you like to identify yourself, sir?
My name is Cody.
And Cody, we actually went through this before, but it didn't record well, so we're trying again. If you hear a certain amount of frustration in my voice, it's because I hate doing things twice. But nonetheless, so Cody, you say that you were awakened from your slumber, not the most comfortable slumber on the concrete, by the sounds of police officers talking?
Yeah, I woke up before, and they were discussing, because a few of our friends were actually awake when they came, and they were discussing what they were going to do about us, people sleeping there, and then ultimately they came to the decision that they were going to give us obstructing the sidewalk tickets.
Now, as far as obstructing, and we mentioned this in an earlier non-recorded recording, you are, your group is occupying at least 7 or 8 feet of this 40-foot sidewalk, and so that this might well be a cause for serious concern for police officers who want to make sure that every inch of the sidewalk is free of the riffraff.
Yeah, apparently we're blocking it pretty good, although, to be said, the 4 or 5 people I've seen walk by haven't seemed to have had much difficulty getting around us at all.
They're just being nice.
I don't know. It seems like they just kind of like walked down them right past us and didn't even hold up their hitch a little bit.
Yeah, well, it is true that that you're only occupying about 5% of this this area that goes directly, it stands directly across from the town clock, and it's near the post office and across from the Bank of the West. So these officers, how many?
And about the obstructing the sidewalk crime, as these folks are now all charged with, and the tickets won't come up for about a month or two into court if they come up at all. They're mainly harassment tickets designed to drive them away from that location and may not even go to court. But obstructing the sidewalk was used against homeless activists 2 decades ago across from what was then called the Java House. It's a cafe now that's, I guess, it's a restaurant around the corner from the Cafe Bene in downtown Santa Cruz. And a guy called Wanton Dave Jacobs was sleeping on the sidewalk, or actually sitting on the sidewalk, taking up no more than a third of the sidewalk and carefully allowing people to have an option to pass and so forth. He was harassed and arrested on complaint of, I think, a local lawyer whose office was nearby, and he didn't like the sight of a homeless person sitting on the sidewalk near his office. It wasn't illegal for him to sit on the sidewalk because he was 14 feet away. At that time, actually, there wasn't a distance forbidden zone requirement, a sitting ban in Santa Cruz. That came in 1994, and this happened in the early 90s. But the point is that in an unusual approach, then Judge, I called him Kangaroo Kelly. I actually liked the guy, Tom Kelly, but sometimes he had a kangaroo court, as they say, an unfair court. Sometimes he simply hopped around the different directions. He never knew what he was going to do. He took his entire court out to the sidewalk to view the scene, and he ruled that since only a third of the sidewalk was taken up, this was not a case of obstructing the sidewalk. Well, here we have a case 20 years later of a group of people taking up, four, 10 feet of a 70-foot sidewalk, a seventh of the sidewalk, and that obviously is not obstructing the sidewalk either. But tell that to the police, and I guess tell it to the judge. There are different judges now, and they're under different pressures to convict homeless people regardless of how thin or non-existent the evidence.
How many were there?
There was 4.
And they were all male officers?
Correct.
All well-armed?
Quite well-armed.
What did they have with them?
A typical pepper spray, tasers, guns, billy clubs, handcuffs.
To deal with your kind, perhaps?
I don't know, to protect and serve, if you will.
Mm-hmm. And so they protected and served you tickets?
Yeah, they were protecting and serving the fuck out of us.
I see. So what exactly did they say as they issued you these obstruction tickets? Did they ask you to move so that you would not be an obstruction?
They requested that we move. We kind of, sort of moved, but not really, and they just kind of gave up after a while.
And that is a second requirement to give a ticket, that if a person is not actually blocking traffic and they agree to move, not to move away, not to leave, but to move from their position if it's actually an obstruction, then they can't be charged with obstructing the sidewalk either, such as my layman's understanding of that charge.
I mean, did they ask you to move, like, say, from your position on the sidewalk to another position nearby on the sidewalk?
They pretty much just told us to stand up. I mean, because we were like, so we don't have to move, because we asked, like, we don't have to move if we get up and stand up and just stand right here. And they were like, nope, as long as you're not obstructing the sidewalk.
So they wanted you to stand at attention, somewhat like Bradley Manning in solitary confinement. Maybe they were taking a page from the court-martial book.
Potentially, I think you're just bored at 4 in the morning and there's nothing to protect in Santa Cruz, so, you know.
Whatever. Well, they are protecting the sidewalk from your depredations.
That's true. I mean, we haven't talked to the sidewalk about it, and I don't feel the sidewalk's been given a chance to give its opinion on it, how it feels about it. And I feel like I should bring that up, that the police have not asked the sidewalk once how it feels about people sleeping here.
Indeed. The sidewalk's opinion, as far as I know, has never been consulted on any of the arrests I've heard about, or citations. But you also... You mentioned before the police apparently failed to give you a legal place to go.
Yeah, they don't seem too concerned with that. They just kind of show up because, from what I've heard, they're mandated to respond to this protest.
Is that what they said on this occasion?
Yeah, exact words out of their mouths. They were mandated to respond to this protest.
I see. So, in other words, they were told to respond to a protest. This might raise some First Amendment concerns that perhaps they want to harass the protest. I don't want to say that our police force would ever get involved in that kind of activity, but what do you think?
I don't know. I mean, there is argument to be made that I remember reading on the internet that, like, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, there was, like, a problem with, like, the Trump Circle, and some people tried to protest that at, like, a farmer's market, and the police just arrested those people. So I don't know, I guess they're not a big fan of protests.
The police have been known to give citations, even arrests, for this kind of demonstration of homeless insubordination, which is not really appreciated by the good mothers and fathers, the ruling class in this town. And understandably, how can you keep the homeless population under control if they're constantly being agitated by this kind of behavior?
Truly an important question. This interview and a few that follow it were actually played on Sunday. For those of you who want to actually hear the rest of it, go to the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org, and check under the name of the show, which is Bathrobes, Pierre's Broadsides, and you'll be able to hear the rest of this interview. I hate it when I play interviews a second time. It's very disturbing. Let's take a musical break, and I'll be right back. Call-in number here, if you want, is 427-3772, and I hope you do, if you got something you want to say. No Shelter, Rage Against the Machine. Here's an interview that I did this morning after I left the courthouse. Today was a day, actually, when there was a prospect of the Santa Cruz 11 for the remaining four that are still being charged with felony vandalism for being in a building, not for actually doing anything, not for actually vandalizing, but for being in a building, supposedly aiding and abetting their presence in the building, aided and abetted crime of vandalism. And they are facing 4 years in prison for this. Four defendants: Brent Adams, Gabriela Ripley Phipps, Cameron Lauren Doe, and Franklin Angel Alcantara. They didn't show up in court today. Actually, Gabriela did, just, I guess, to observe what happened, and also because, the question, they were scheduled for trial in May, in this clearly political trial that's been dragging on for now 14 months. But, and there was, I think, Gabriela's attorney felt it would be good for her to go to trial quickly because case against her is so flimsy, and the DA, there's been a new DA on the case, the old DA, Rebecca Young, having been shown to be so incompetent and, if not mendacious, that is lying, that she actually quit or was fired from the district attorney's office and headed for Texas, at least by the reports of those in the DA's office and the scuttlebutt about. On the other hand, the four defendants in a trial together may have more solidarity. It also may put more pressure on the district attorney's office to settle this case before it goes to trial, by dropping the charges or severely limiting them to something that they might decide they want to plead to just to get the hell out of this disgusting situation. This just gruesome situation of constantly having to come to court, constantly having to worry about not leaving the state without permission, staying away from the vacant bank building. I can't even walk on the sidewalk nearby. I had that condition on me for a year, although I think halfway through the year I got my attorney to get the judge to say, well, look, you know, hasn't been proven guilty of anything. He's a reporter. I don't know if the judge said that, but he removed that condition. Anyway, today, and there was a court hearing that essentially put off the trial of all four until September. We have a caller, however. Let's see who's on the line. Hey, you're on Free Radio with Robert, caller. Welcome. Hello?
Hello, Robert, Commander X calling. Can you hear me?
I can. The infamous, the one you hate, the guy who hates to be called Curb Hugger Chris.
This is Commander X. How you doing tonight, bro?
Hey, welcome, welcome. How you doing, Chris?
I'm all right. Thanks for letting me come on.
Oh no, always. You're an experienced radio broadcaster, you know, and you're also a strong activist. And welcome to Free Radio again.
Well, it's good to be back here. It's been a while, for sure. Following Johnson's feet, Becky, in the last 6 months or year has been injecting herself into the world of anonymous. And
I gotta say,
the cops have been taking note of the situation in Santa Cruz.
Hello? Oh, dear. We lost him. Well, that was, sounds like it could be Commander X, also known as Curbugger Chris, or Chris Doyen, as he's sometimes called. Chris is, he was last seen at the Occupy movement about a year and a few months ago, actually. He was charged federally previously with hacking or... Boy, I can never get the phrase right, but he was accused of taking down the County of Santa Cruz's website for 18 minutes by flooding it with calls. That was the accusation. He hampered their traffic. Online activists regard this as a form of First Amendment free speech. So did his attorney, and he gave a press conference here. He's quite brilliant in his ability to use the internet. And if those of you who have long memories, remember 2 years ago, Peace Camp 2010, which is a protest that ran for 3 months outside the county building. It established and at City Hall. They moved to City Hall at some point. For a month, they established a place and an actually nighttime porta-potty. What a concept. That served 50 or more homeless people who slept there to get around the sleeping ban that is still the infamous law in Santa Cruz. And Commander X or Kerbugger Chris or whatever whatever you're going by these days, if you want to call back, feel free to do so. You're welcome to call in and give us an update. For some reason, we lost you. I don't know where you were calling from. There were rumors that Commander X was in Canada. There were rumors that he was trying to go to Tunisia and get asylum there. So who knows? Maybe we'll get the straight dope from Chris as to what's happening. But maybe not. Maybe he's been cut off from us by the powers that be. So what I'm going to do now is, again, play this interview from this morning. I mentioned that the trial of the Santa Cruz, the remaining four of the Santa Cruz 11, has been postponed until September. And as soon as I can figure out what happened to the Santa Cruz 11 website, we'll try to post that. And I'll probably post a story about it on, again, one of the favorite news services I use, indybay.org/Santa Cruz, indybay.org/ one word, small letters, Santa Cruz, also known as Santa Cruz Indie Media. So the trial, which was anticipated in May, won't be happening till September, and there'll be a readiness hearing in August to make sure that's cooking. The attorneys have conflicts. I passed Judge Burdick on the street. He wasn't the judge who made that ruling and arranged that schedule. Apparently four courtrooms were dumped into the court of Volkman, Judge Volkman. And Tim Volkman, I guess his name is. And he's the... he made a discredited ruling that forwarded these four cases to trial. It's too bad. Politically motivated cases, which Bob Lee has been pushing. I've called him the bag man for Wells Fargo, since it's all about people in a protest inside a vacant Wells Fargo leased bank across from its operational bank downtown, and having to do with sort of a object lesson to protesters not to occupy vacant buildings. Ironically, in other cities, vacant buildings are frequently occupied, particularly by homeless people who need to sleep in them. And there was a meeting last Saturday of Homes Not Jails, Keith McHenry advising people on how to start a Homes Not Jails. And there was a meeting on Wednesday which discussed Homes Not Jails at the HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meeting, which happens every week. And I missed the beginning of it, so I'm not quite sure what went down there, but... the key issue at Homes Not Jails is to get together vacant property and vacant properties that are unused, and then start using them in ways that serve the community and those who are outside. There are so many vacant buildings, as the sticker goes, empty buildings are the crime. And I think that's really a true statement. So, while that got me down to court this morning, and as I walked away, I ran into a woman with a cane. A short woman, small woman, an older woman in her 70s, and actually I guess she was just about to turn 70, and this is the interview I got with her.
So, it's April 25th, I believe it's the 25th, 2013, It's about 10:20. I'm coming out of the courthouse, walking over to the Santa Cruz Diner with Barbara Feldhaus, who prefers not to be recorded, but who reminded me that I was a witness to her being taken down by, what was it, four or five, I don't know how many cops took you down, but it was a bunch, in front of the Cooper House. You're 70 years old.
It wasn't in front of the Cooper House. It was in front of the Luly Carpenters at the Octagon. Sorry about that.
You walk with a cane. You've been a resident here for 33, 34 years?
I'll be 70 in October.
70 in October. You're on Social Security disability. And
I've been thrown out of 750 Bay Avenue Senior Apartments for smoking medical marijuana or any kind of smoking.
We have you on tape.
You bet.
Now, here is a judge.
John
this guy's going to give you justice. I mean, I know this man. I've seen him on the bench. You know, poor Judge Volkman is so overloaded because you weren't on the bench. Now, what's going on here?
And that's Judge Burdick passing by. He's the judge who has been continuing to forward the Santa Cruz 11 cases. Admittedly, seven of them at his under his jurisdiction have been dropped, seven of the 11, but four are still proceeding. And I was kind of razzing him about it. I'm actually fundamentally indignant about it. I mean, you have murder cases that are not going to court because the Santa Cruz 11 political prosecutions buff up the badge of Chief Vogel and puff up the reputation of D.A. Bob Lee are proceeding. And also there's this absurd theory that Wells Fargo is going to somehow get $23,000 in restitution from four impoverished defendants, three of whom have public defenders. I mean, it's completely absurd, waste of time and money, and it delays real justice, if there is such a thing in these courts, which is dubious, but at least the pretense of real justice around real crimes, like murder, assault, robbery. Barbara and I were walking out of the court area toward onto Water Street, and then walking up Water Street, ran into Judge Burdick. He wasn't in court this morning, and instead the other judge was handling his cases and those of three other courts, an example of the kind of burden that this over-policing, this attack on the Occupy movement, which is really what this is all about, the drug war, this whole series of groundless prosecutions has in delaying any real trials for real crimes. And who knows? Burdick maybe knows about this. But, you know, some people say, well, you know, he's a better judge than Simons. Well, it doesn't impress me much.
Yeah, I mean, we must postpone the murder trials for the Santa Cruz Four, right? Bunch of idiots. So, yeah. I'm sorry, I had
You're
to...
You're looking for justice?
I'm looking to expose injustice. We're not going to find justice here, I'm afraid. But
justice, though?
Well, maybe between individuals in this society.
Over time.
You found that? I'm recording you now, by the way, so watch your step.
Over time. Democracy failed in Greece, but we're still working on it.
You're originally from Greece, or?
No. Newark, New Jersey, the ghetto.
So you said you were outside for 4.5 months after spending a lot of time in...
And still outside.
And are still outside tonight, although you may have a room at the El Centro, you're saying, at some point.
Yes, I have disability and Social Security.
But,
so I have an income, and they have a vacancy.
But for the last 4.5 months, they didn't have vacancies. You were outside, and you decided not to use the Winter Armory shelter or try to get on the Pauley Loft or try to get into the other programs because you tried them before.
Well, I've gotten scabies and lice. I've had pneumonia. A broken ankle. You know, life on the street is pretty rugged, and there are lots of young men that can handle it.
Yeah. You mentioned you've lost three phones on the street.
Oh, I've lost three phones. I've lost wheelie things filled with clothes. I've lost my identification's been stolen. My driver's license, my library card. All can be replaced and have been.
Any assaults, either sexual or otherwise?
Only by the police this one time. The people on the street who are penniless are very compassionate with each other because everyone knows that you don't have a damn thing.
Let's get back to that incident where I came with a tape recorder kind of late in the game. It was that in front of the Cooper House on the Hexagon, or not the Cooper House, it was Montres Srinis coffee shop, which is at Front Street and Cooper.
Lulu Carpenter's at the Octagon.
Yeah, the Octagon. And you, when I came, there were several police officers on top of you. You
were there.
What?
Don't remember.
Yeah, well, that's what I saw.
One took me down and broke an ankle.
And
they took me into custody.
Right.
And I have a medical history.
So you were accused, and in fact,
I was. This is just, you know, a repeat.
It's all right. But I'm turning off the tape recorder for the moment.
Better than on the street.
And you, as I understand it, you actually intentionally took a ring that had previously been yours?
Right.
From a store. And
the owner I know.
The owner you know, and it was a $1,200 ring, so this was a felony, right?
Right.
And
everything's been dismissed, discharged, and thanks to Diana L. August, public defender, who did a wonderful job, and all judges and associates agreed. So everything's been wiped away.
Although the actual situation where you, why were you taken down on the sidewalk? Did you whip out an M16 and threaten to shoot everybody?
No, I walked away with my cane. There's no way I can walk very fast.
Right.
You know, spinal surgery.
How tall are you?
I used to be 5'4". I'm 5'3" now.
And what happened immediately before you were accosted by the officers?
What happened? Oh, I was being followed by the sales lady who wanted the ring back, which, of course, I was holding on to. And she's grabbing at my clothes and getting hysterical because she's responsible for everything. I hope she closed the shop before she ran out. Tyra is a wonderful lady. I just needed to get off the street.
Are we crossing here or are you going the other way?
I'm headed this way to 551.
Oh, wait. I'll walk you far away if you want. You're on your way to get some disability stuff?
Or? Oh, medical medication. Lexapro and levothyroxine.
Now, the sales lady, you know, was upset that you were taking the ring. She was kind of reaching for you and trying to pull you off or to stop you. But how did the police get involved?
You know, I'm not sure. I don't know if it was a hospitality person that saw me. I don't know if it was a first alarm. I just knew that, you know, there eventually were going to be people there who would take me into custody.
Was there a need to smash you down to the sidewalk, or were you smashed down?
I think there was no need, but they then thought there was. They didn't know how old I was. They just did their job. They're just cops. They don't have that much pay. There's too much crime to deal with, so they become bullies.
And in your case, I think, what was your response to their seizing you?
I wasn't teased.
You were?
I was not teased or tased or any of that.
No, but they seized you. They
me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, shit, they threw me down.
Okay. And I know when I got there, you were upset. In fact, you were cursing. And they were.
Well, they threw me in a padded cell. Because I have a medical history.
And were you?
And I have been suicidal.
Were you suicidal on that day?
I don't think so. But this occurred before, so.
Now, do you have a clear recollection of events? You know, getting the ring, then walking away. And
it was done purposefully to get into jail, to get off the street. I've been not assaulted physically, but everything's been stolen, and most of it is women.
There's a needle. That's my first needle I've ever seen on the sidewalk.
I see medical waste everywhere,
really?
And they're not all diabetics.
I should ask you, as a sort of an aside, what do you think of the closing of the Barson Street Needle Exchange?
The closing of what?
The Parsons Street Needle Exchange.
Oh, I think it's awful. I think there should be deposit places for needles in every bathroom that's public. And I think that those needles should be available at any pharmacy for free. Clean.
Kind of agree.
Your addicts, you give them the opportunity to do it for themselves.
But that's enabling. You're enabling them.
Hey, I don't care. If they have to have that heroin, it becomes part of their physical need. They become sick if they don't get it. They've changed their neurotransmitter systems in their brain. And if they need it, they should get it. It's illegal in lots of places. You can be a legal addict in England or Netherlands or Denmark or, you know, it's just a sickness. It's an addiction. That's all it is.
What about meth users? Similar?
Meth users, it's a very difficult recovery. And it's a very long recovery because you have to give this person the opportunity to learn how to trust again, because he does not trust himself or anyone. It's miserable. Speed always kills.
What's your experience with what I call the homeless lack of services center?
That's it. It's a lack. It's a lack of service and a lot of talk. And a lot of hoops, and to very great frustration. Hours available and open are not available and open. They're restricted.
Yeah, you're not supposed to be there during the day unless you have business. And we only recently were able to get them to provide documentation.
Social services have been destroyed by people like the Coonerty family, the people who have been most successfully business-wise, don't want transients. They want them out of sight, illegal, or thrown away. Just not in my backyard.
I mean, transients like you and your 34 years here?
Well, you know, I know Neil for over 30 years in the Jewish temple.
Neil Coonerty.
Neil Coonerty.
Owner of the bookshop Santa Cruz, supervisor.
Ryan, his daughter.
Son.
You know, and I think she and her husband are now the owners of the bookshop.
Right.
And Neil comes in every now and then. I think I apologized to him for yelling at him a year and a half or 2 years ago. He's just another fucking businessman now. When he was married with Candy, at least I could talk with him and her. Those were good days.
How long ago was that?
Well, she died quite a while ago. The children grow up. You know, I have had three children. Two of them I have raised right here.
So, there's a lot of controversy. They recently closed Cowles Beach at night in order to stop, quote, illegal camping, needle users, theft of electricity under the boardwalk, drug use, scaring the horses, and so forth. What's your thoughts about that?
I think the powers that be will do whatever they can to restrict the activities of those people who are less fortunate.
And what kind of a response do you recommend from those of us in the community who oppose that?
I expect people to talk to each other and do for themselves and their neighbors. You can't help anyone unless you can survive. And if you can survive, you can help somebody else.
So, you broke your ankle was broken. Do we know the names of the police officers involved here?
No.
Are you interested in... You're not interested in pursuing a lawsuit around
them? No.
Because...
They're just doing their fucking job. They didn't know who I was, nor what the crime was.
Did you stop when they asked you to?
Of course.
Then why were they doing their fucking job if they broke your ankle and took you down to the sidewalk? It didn't look to me like they were, unless you were a raving maniac who was resisting arrest.
I don't know what went on from your point of view because I was in it.
Right.
All I can do is let you know what I remember.
Did they use excessive force?
Oh, I think so.
See, that's why I don't think that they're not doing their job if they're using excessive force.
I'm very frail. I'm down to 85 pounds.
Right. You mean that jailhouse food you had for the last couple of weeks didn't help out?
No, it wasn't the last couple of weeks. I was in there for 2 weeks, but it's quite a while ago now.
Oh, boy. I guess it all time goes so quickly for me.
My ankle is healing. I'm walking.
But you still are on a cane as you were when the police tackled you and took you down.
I've been on a cane for, I'm still in recovery from spinal surgery.
And there were those who were watching me saying, oh, she's off her meds. What would you say to that?
I wasn't off my meds.
So your cries of indignation and were in pain had to do with the fact that you were being improperly assaulted for when you were attacked?
No, that's not it at all, Robert.
Sorry.
You're interpreting. I got pissed off because I got awakened. It was the first ticket for sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
And that offended me.
Mm-hmm.
And I did what I did to get into jail, to get off the street.
Right, no, I understand
that. I'm not charging the police with any kind of brutality or any of that shit because they protected me and fed me.
Well, the jail did.
The jail
did. The police didn't, actually.
Well, sheriff.
There you go. You've reached the pharmacy, and I'm talking with Barbara Feldhaus, and I'm going to leave it at that while you get your prescription. Have a seat if you want. Any final words, Barbara, before you before I take off?
I'm doing fine, Robert. I expect to be housed within a month or so.
Cool. But tonight you'll be outside.
Probably.
Thank you. And if you need me, I gave you my card. Get in touch. Say that again?
I've been buying and selling for 45 years. I will survive.
Buying and selling?
I am Jewish. 100%. Both sides, all the way back. German.
These Jews are everywhere.
These fucking Jews are just survivors.
But my grandmother was from England, and she's an English Jew.
Well, you know, you're just the elite.
Yeah.
What can I say? So, Barbara, thank you.
Okay.
And anything else? That's good.
And the final scene was in a pharmacy up Water Street in the medical complex where there was apparently another Jewish woman who was buying medication of some kind or something there. And that was Barbara Feldhaus, who I happened to see. I saw her after she was taken down to the sidewalk in front of the Lulu Carpenters at the Octagon. And did interview some people and played those interviews on the air. I'm having a little trouble finding them in my limited descriptions that I have at the Huff website, which kind of archive all these shows. But it did look like another gross overuse of the number of police officers involved. And again, it was interesting. She said she'd gotten her first sleeping ticket, and she was really angry about that. And so she decided to go to jail by stealing back a ring that would previously have been hers. There's some indication it may have been even with the collusion of the store owner, maybe. I don't know. But she went to jail for 2 weeks, and they dropped all the charges, and now she's out and still outside with no legal place to go, still likely to be woken up, hobbling around in a cane with a broken ankle, compliments of the police. She's entirely far too forgiving of the police. I'm sorry. I don't go for that. It sounds like the Stockholm syndrome to me, where you become sympathetic with your oppressor. It's just wrong. I mean, it's just. I guess you want to believe people are human beings underneath, and underneath somewhere they are human beings. But there's a lot of inhuman things done by human beings because they're acting in a militaristic or otherwise robotic fashion under orders, or because, you know, their darker stereotyping aspect has been released and empowered by this increased police state stuff that we're in the middle of. Let's get musical, and I'll be right back. You can call in if you've had some experiences of your own, or perhaps you want to criticize, comment, who knows what. 427-3772 is the call-in number. I'm Robert Norris, and the name of the show is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. And Kerbugger Chris, a.k.a. Commander X, if you're out there, call in. We want to hear more. You're beginning to break up, so it was becoming difficult to hear you, but I hope you are able to get back to us. And I meant what I said. I've had many criticisms of a number of criticisms of Commander X's behaviors at different times, but I've also had a number of things to say that, I praised him for a number of things, and that's, a lot of stuff by Commander X, as he was a mainstay of the Peace Camp 2010 protest, and instrumental in getting it out far more widely as a news story than any previous protest around homeless issues. And as a consequence, the Barisoni, the city attorney, created the waiting list exception to the camping ordinance, which we were able, through the Visible Sleepers last week, in a Huff victory, only in the sense that Huff supplied the receipts. The Visible Sleepers were the ones who decided to do this four-night protest, and also to get documentation that they were on the waiting list for these homeless services, and therefore sleeping tickets would be automatically dismissed. And they were not really even criminals under the sleeping ban, because that's an exception. So the police shouldn't even be ticketing them in the first place. The point being then that other homeless people can use that same receipt. And if anybody homeless people want a receipt, I'll be at the Red Church probably on Monday with a lot of those receipts, or at the Occupy Santa Cruz Food Not Bombs meetings. Food Not Bombs meets at 4 o'clock on Saturdays at the front of the post office. And Occupy Santa Cruz usually has a meeting on the same day at 5:30 following the Food Not Bombs meal. And there'll be some receipts there if you want to use them if you're a homeless person. What you need to do is go out to the Homeless Lack of Services Center, sign up for the waiting list, and then ask them to fill out a receipt indicating that you're on the waiting list. And then hopefully you can sleep together with a group of people so you won't get beaten up by troll busters, as a number of people have been, though I haven't heard of people getting beaten yet in their sleeping bags. I heard it mostly of people walking around down on Pacific Avenue, out at Cabrillo College, down in the downtown area. Let's get musical, and I'll be right back, and maybe you will too. 427-3772 is the call-in number.
Now I sympathize with the homeless when I see him on the evening news. Somewhere there must be a place where they can park their weary shoes. Maybe a camp in the country or a building on the edge of town. But that shelter there across the street is only gonna get me down. Everybody should have a home. Everybody must be fed. Everyone has a right to a roof and below it a nice warm bed. We applaud your noble efforts at guarding their collective health. And we'll gladly give you funds and food long as you can put them somewhere else. See, I don't want to have to lock my door to be inside safe and sound. This neighborhood will go to pot with the likes of them around. It's no fun out there in the cold. Yes, I know just how they feel. But I just can't bear to see a hungry face when I'm eating a nice warm meal. Oh, everybody should have a home. Everybody must be fed. Everyone has a right to a roof and below it a nice warm bed. We applaud your noble efforts at guarding their collective health.
and we'll gladly give you buns and food,
long as you can put them somewhere else. I've got a friend who owns a store about a half a block away. Every year she donates goods and money to United Way. But she thinks it's bad for business to have the homeless walking by. She says, why not send them south for the winter so they can stay warm and dry?
Oh, everybody should have a home. Everybody must be fed. Everyone has a right to a roof and below it a nice warm bed. We applaud your noble efforts at guarding their collective health, and we'll gladly give you funds and food,
long as you can put them somewhere else. Well, now please understand our position. It's not the way it looks. We want them housed, but out of sight. There are zoning laws on the books. Long as we can clear our conscience and preserve our civic pride, we'll give our consent, even pay the rent on a place where they can hide.
'Cause everybody should have a home. Everybody must be fed. Everyone has a right to a roof and below it a nice warm bed. We applaud your noble efforts at guarding their collective health, and we'll gladly give you funds and food,
long as you can put them somewhere else.
Yes, we'll gladly give you funds and food,
long as you can put them somewhere else.
That was Mark Levy from 3 decades ago, but it's still the same old story, called The Homeless Shuffle on his tape. I think it's also a CD, Take Off Your Clothes. I may have played that song recently. I know I played it some years ago, Take Off Your Clothes to Those You Oppose. It's a way of dealing with aggression, kind of to tamp it down. So... you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM. FreakRadio.org is our master website. It is a place where you can catch archives of some of the shows, and you can donate. You can also get application forms. We are currently looking for a studio that's cheaper than $500 that we're paying now. We need to pay $300 in order to actually come out as sort of an operationally effective staying above the water kind of thing. Also, we, in a couple of months, I think it's a month and a half we have now, we have to move our transmitter, or we'll go dark on the transmitting. We won't be able to transmit to the community as a direct radio station. We'll still be online, but we will not be able to transmit. And that would be a real pity, since a number of people, particularly poor people, do not have computer access, although admittedly it's much more frequent. And I've actually raised the question of, are radio stations a thing of the past? I don't know. But do think about letting us know if you know of a tall tree on a piece of property that you are living on, or if you have any suggestions as to where we can set up our transmitter. We need that kind of help. And I think the community needs it if we are to continue to broadcast. I mean, it's, we do. It's quite simple. And the way you get in touch with us is by going to freakradio.org, the website, www.freakradio.org. You can also give me a call at Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. So there. Kind of looking back over the last few days, There was a city council meeting on Tuesday where, in the evening, the city council passed the first ever beach curfew that I'm aware of in Santa Cruz. That is a curfew on the dry sand between the midnight and dawn at Cowles Beach. They had the police chief and all his regalia dressed up in uniform, looking like some kind of local general. Kevin Vogel, nice guy. We say hello to each other. He asked how I was doing. I said, how are you? I'm good. I was kind of tired sitting in a big chair in the corner during this council meeting. The seats are usually hard wood, but there was this one very comfortable-looking chair, and I kept offering, you know, people who looked older and feebler than myself, of whom there are less and less, actually, but there's still plenty of people who look like they could use a comfortable place to sit at city council. And I got to the council meeting at 5. At 5 o'clock is, as regular listeners of free radio, this free radio show know, is the doghouse session of council, where what previously used to be oral communications at the beginning of the evening session at 7 o'clock or the afternoon session has been moved to a special area that isolates it from the other folks who come to city council. And perhaps, presumably, those listening to city council, because it often happens after the city council leaves and then comes back briefly, tapping their fingers and restless to hear these people who come in and give them 2 or 3 minutes worth of items not on the agenda, comments about real issues that the city council is studiously ignoring, or their own issues, people's own sense of what is important. Anyway, you know, it's been put into a special isolated segment, and I continue to mention it because it's an example of the corruption and the breakdown of the democratic process. I don't really think we've ever had a democratic process in Santa Cruz, but even the fantasy of a democratic process gets further and further away from us. I mean, ironically, the closest thing I saw to a democratic process was this huge council, where council sort of recessed itself, abandoned its evening meeting, in order to schmooze with Take Back Santa Cruz, who a group that I do not agree with in most particulars, but that led a march from the Harvey West. That was like 2 weeks ago. I think it was 2 weeks ago. It might have been 4 weeks ago. My time sense is getting a little sleepy here. And there were 100 or 200 people in the courtyard talking, vigorously debating, chatting, smiling, children. It was a free exchange. It was a democratic exchange. That was when I got there. I think I may have missed the speeches portion of it, which might have been less democratic. But it contrasted very sharply with a typical city council meeting, where the public has virtually no time to say anything directly or argue with each other or get into productive, lengthy conversations or make a stance as to what they want done in a clear way. They have to shoehorn their comments into these tiny periods of time where the staff and the council members can talk on and on and on. And that's you know, at least in the Congress, they limit Congress people to limited time periods for speaking. And, you know, I suppose that, you know, the public doesn't get to speak at all in the National Congress or in the state legislature. So unless they go to committee hearings and they're called by the committee members, or unless they shout from the audience, in which case they're dragged off by the police. It's democracy in action, you see. But I found that this activity very unusual in the courtyard, where the entire city council was running around talking to people individually, and you could actually access city council members, and you could have debates with people of very different points of view. Take Back Santa Cruz. Myself, Brent Adams, there might have been one or two other people of a different point of view were, you know, kind of, we planted ourselves in the middle of this and had some signs. Who were accused of hijacking the protest, their protest. It was their protest. The city council was doing its bend and grease approach to this group, which they're not really giving them anything really substantive except they're cowering, and they've closed the Barson Street Needle Exchange. They have backed away from any support for the medical marijuana dispensary, the second one that was going to be opened in the Harvey West area. At least I'm not aware that they're supporting it. It was voted down by the Planning Commission with Annalisa Cube's Take Back Santa Cruz taking responsibility or taking praise or bragging about that on its website. Police are getting more money. But anyway, at this council session, of the oral communication session that happened 2 days ago, I'm going to get back to that. I just wanted to emphasize that there seems to be a different. I'd like to see the city council come out and deal with leftists in the way that they seem to be licking and sucking and chatting and friendlyizing with the people on the right who've organized through a campaign of fear and misinformation. The rest of the community, or some of the community, not the rest of the community, but part of the community, residents, to march around picking up needles and screaming about enabling and getting rid of homeless services and cutting off services of any kind to a needle, making needle exchange a much less accessible program. And also, essentially, it's attacking the counterculture of the 60s. It's a kind of a gentrification program that wants to see the city. It misequates poverty with crime. Anyway, there was a little bit about that. I'm going to sort of have to kind of mix a few things here as I talk. There was this city council meeting. I'm talking about two of them. 5 o'clock oral communications on Tuesday, where a few of us were able to speak. And there is also the 7 o'clock Cowell Beach curfew, which I'm going to talk about. And then the next day, yesterday, there was this homelessness forum at Santa Cruz High School run by, I guess, a number of people who are trying to, in their own way, stand up to and oppose this really nasty right-wing toxic mood that's going through Santa Cruz, empowering the police to massively over-police and also go after so-called quality-of-life crimes, as it has to do with destroying the quality of life of poor people in order to reassure those who are more well-to-do that there's no poverty around them, or that, you know, that guy sleeping in his car will be gone because he might come and get me. He's going to get my mama. I don't know. Whatever. Anyway, at 5 o'clock on Tuesday, I got up and I talked about the Visible Sleepers protest. And at some point I might be playing that probably on Sunday. I tried to point out to homeless people and those who know them that this is really a very good approach to use to deal with sleeping tickets, and also to document the fact that police are using phony charges against homeless people, particularly homeless protesters, in order to drive them out of visible spaces, which they have no right to do. But they're doing it anyway. And that's another extent what another item that I'm going to be talking about, the California Homeless Bill of Rights, is designed to prevent. Whether it'll actually see the light of day is an interesting question. But it did surprise me by getting passed in partial form the California Assembly Judiciary Committee. It has to go now to the Appropriations Committee and then to the Assembly generally, and then it has to go to the Senate, and then it has to get past Governor Brown. That's quite a road to have to take, but maybe it will. That's Tom Ammiano's AB5. Call in to Mark Stone. I got a call back from his office today saying that he had voted for it. And good for him. Once, however, the League of Cities and, who knows, maybe even the city of Santa Cruz weighs in against it, although I think they may find that hard to do and maintain their hypocritical, we love the homeless, or we're a compassionate group, but we're not enabling. No. It's hard to maintain this fiction of compassion if you're going to oppose a Bill of Rights for homeless people. I'll be talking about that in a moment. Anyway, I spoke about the Visible Sleepers protest, which did produce, for the first time, the Homeless Lack of Services Center giving out receipts. Or I should say, They didn't have any receipts, but Huff brought receipts, which they then filled out and signed, indicating that a homeless person is on the waiting list and therefore should not be ticketed for sleeping, or if they are, the ticket should be dismissed. This is a great victory in many respects. In other respects, it's a tiny step forward because police immediately shifted to using other approaches. But if that's documented, it can show a pattern of conscious harassment by the police to avoid dealing with the real issue, which is the lack of any legal places for homeless people to go, or more fundamentally, the lack of fundamental civil rights for people to make choices about sleeping, given the lack of housing, given even a lifestyle choice. I mean, I'll go that far, provided they're not injuring the property, provided they're not destroying the environment, then to simply go to sleep has to be a right. And in many countries it is, in India, for example. Anyway, I spoke about that at the City Council on Tuesday, and Pamela Comstock, who's the Take Back Santa Cruz co-founder, as I understand it, and one of the most recently elected council members, got up and walked out in the middle of as I started to speak. And she had done this 2 weeks before. And, you know, it's kind of interesting. What I did was when she walked back in, as I was concluding my speech, I turned to her and I indicated her and I said to the council, it is outrageous that Ms. Comstock leaves this meeting when a member of the public is speaking and declines to listen to that person. Her responsibility is to do so. And I made that comment and felt good doing it. I felt good, frankly, embarrassing her, partially because I'm ideologically opposed to her, partially because I don't like her rudeness, and partially because I feel council members have a responsibility to be accessible to the community and to listen to what they have to say. But, you know, there was another part of me, and I've talked about this with some folks since, and I apologize if you're listening to this broadcast and you get to hear it again. I thought she was, in a way, more honest than any of the other six council members who looked and nodded as though they were listening as their eyes glazed over and had absolutely, you know, I'm not aware they took in anything I said or it had any, it created any response. She was honest. She said, and what she said to me when she got back was, I don't like your T-shirt. And my T-shirt had a picture of a police officer firing at someone and the words, warning, police in area. And, you know, she was honest and she was candid and she wasn't bullshitting the way the rest of these council members do. On the other hand, she does have responsibility to listen to people. And insofar as she's not even doing that in a token way, she's abusing her office, in my view. So later on at 7 o'clock, when I came back to the 7 o'clock session, when they were talking about the Cowell Beach situation, how horrible it is, the Cowell Beach, you know, there's illegal drug use, there's drug paraphernalia there, and the police can't get to them because they have lookouts. These drug users have lookouts, and they hide their stuff when the police come. And people wonder why there's so much debris on the beach because the police are, you know, cracking down. People dispose of their shit very quickly and leave it there. Yeah, then hence leaving needles behind. And instead of putting in, you know, sharps containers and trash cans and open bathrooms at night, you know, we have more police and closed curfews, which is ridiculous. I mean, also a violation of basic civil rights and part of a creeping police state mentality that ends up with drones killing people who have been decided for, targeted for assassination in private groups by people who've decided they are terrorists. Yeah, Führer Obama is currently, you know, he's the terrorist in chief who decides who's the terrorist that he doesn't like, and he goes after them with his drones. And this process is happening all over the country. This militarization, this private policing, increasing private prisons. It is, and of course, the shifting of wealth to the rich, and the cutting off of Social Security. All these things are part of a sort of a general class war that, unfortunately, the people who are poor are losing. Now, they're always usually poor on the losing end. The middle class is also on the losing end of this one because the rich are empowered here, if you want to talk about being empowered. Anyway, And two others spoke about the Cal Beach issue, and I spoke rather sharply, and this time Pamela Comstock sat in her seat dutifully. I don't know if she listened or not. Maybe she had music playing and earplugs or something. I don't know what she had. There actually was one time when the entire council, except for two people, walked out on me because I was criticizing a coastal hotel development by using an Indian accent. I was saying, oh, no, you know, it is a wonderful thing to have all this money. We will throw it at the hotel, and it is a wonderful thing. And this was interpreted by one council member as being an attack on East Indian hotel managers in the area, and it wasn't. It was simply a sort of a Johnny Carson, if you're familiar with that ancient talk show host from 40 years ago. It was a sort of educational amusement entertainments sort of thing. But the entire council, except for two people, walked out on me, and I then attempted to at a continued hearing the next day, because there were many people who opposed the Coast Hotel project successfully. Eventually, I tried to speak again, and then Mayor Rotkin had me arrested, or let's put it this way, the cop forcibly escorted me out of the area. I claimed I had not been able to speak because the city council members had left the chambers. They didn't listen to me. And it was inappropriate. Then I had a right to come back the next day and try again. But, you know, it makes for some good theater, and it also, I think, makes a good point. But, of course, it's a difficult and difficult struggle, which mainly looks to the future for having, you know, some kind of vindication or seeing some sort of change. They voted in unanimously the Cowell Beach curfew, even though they were all working around the fantasy of a great crime wave, although Chief Vogel presented no evidence of any crime wave. He just made assertions about we've got to take back the Cowell Beach. That quite wasn't the words he said. It was more like, it's been hijacked. That was Chief Vogel's word. Because people are finding some needles on the beach, because there's not enough cleanup crews going down there. And Save Our Shores, to its discredit, supported this curfew. So did everybody else except the ACLU, which for once, under motion from Steve Plaich, opposed the curfew. Unanimously, the ACLU board on Monday met and opposed the curfew. And what I may do is try to get a hold of Plaich and hear a little bit more about that meeting. I think I'll try to do that right now. Maybe get some updates. And I'll pause in my discussion of this issue. We'll see if we can get old Steve on the line. He's a perennial city council candidate, homeless persons legal assistance project guy, needle exchange worker for a while, and also suicide prevention man, but often less accessible than he used to be, which, at least to me,
your call has been forwarded
looks like
to an automatic voice
happening.
Message system.
But we'll leave
Steve
him a message.
He's not available.
And you can reach him
at
466.
Please record your message.
6078. If you want to, he is accessible to others, and sometimes he's accessible to me. Hey, Steve, this is Robert calling in from Free Radio. I'd like to get an update from you on a number of issues, if you can, before 8 o'clock. There's 45 minutes left in the show. The number here is 427-3772. I know you were at the homelessness poverty pimpery last night, which I also attended, and I'd like to get your update on that, as well as, there's some talk about you hosting a show with Ken Skindog Collins debating someone else around public restrooms and a sanctuary campground, which Brent Adams has been working on and has done a great video on. Anyway, get back to me and get back to Free Radio if you can. And that's a hope and a prayer there. So, as I said, there was, as there was with the, well, even less than with the parking lot and garages panic and paranoia laws that makes it illegal to socialize in a parking lot any time of the day or night. Makes it illegal to sit in your car and read a book in a city-owned parking lot any day or night. Makes it illegal to hand out flyers in a parking lot or a parking garage any time of the day or night in any city-owned parking lot, even if you paid to be there, even if you're engaging in nothing else other than passing out literature or chatting to friends. At least there, the police tried to present some stats that Ryan Coonerty, who pushed for this measure, was worried that his employees at the bookshop Coonerty, or the bookshop Santa Cruz as more widely known, were feeling uncomfortable. They were feeling uncomfortable because they were afraid there were people lurking in the parking garage. And they didn't have a lot of rape stats or even assault stats. They had some car break-in stats, not a lot. But in a night before last, the Cowell Beach curfew passed with not a single stat being presented. They had the calls for service at the Cowell Beach, but there was no indication that showed stats there, the crime rate there, in any way being any different or larger than anywhere else in the city. So the argument about putting in a curfew there could be used anywhere in the city. I mean, why not curfew the whole city? In fact, why not force everyone to stay in their homes? It works in Boston. You can run around after terrorists, as they call them. They didn't have to present stats. They had the whole thing sewn up to begin with. And the thing that depressed me a little, although I've never had much hope for Micah Posner, was that Micah apparently wanted people to come to the city council meeting and oppose the curfew. And a number of us did. A small number of us. Three of us, actually. Ron Pomerantz speaking for the ACLU, me speaking for Huff and myself. More for myself. I think Huff also opposed it, but I don't know if we had a formal vote on that before the meeting. And then another woman who spoke, I think Stacy spoke, talking about how in other countries there are all kinds of night events, which are really the way to deal with crime. You have more people there. I mean, in Santa Cruz and in the United States generally, they have these curfews that show up. And I talked about the creeping curfews, how you've got curfews all over the city that are happening, and that, you know, they claim they're temporary. This is supposed to be a one-year temporary curfew, Cowell's Beach. But I've seen these temporary things. Well, it will sunset if it isn't renewed, but it's not hard to renew it. You can say, yeah, it's working just fine. We have no problems. You know, and that'll be that. And a whole block of territory will be taken away from the public's use. And a whole new series of excuses will be used to go after homeless people who go hide in those areas to try to get away from the police. It's not good. It's very bad. And it's part of the Take Over Santa Cruz agenda, as I call Take Back Santa Cruz. They say, you see all these little signs in the windows of buildings, instead of keep Santa Cruz weird, it's keep Santa Cruz safe. I like to say keep Santa Cruz scared. That's really what the story is here. I'm going to have to start giving out bumper stickers that say that. You're listening to Bathrop Spears Broadsides and My Endless Rant. I'm Robert Norse. Name of the show is, as mentioned, Bathrop Spears Broadsides. And you can call in at 427-3772. I am going to turn now to another one of my favorite distractions, the Marat Sade. Marat Sade is a play, the full name of which is much more of a mouthful. The Persecution and Assassination of Marat, as performed by the inmates of the Asylum of Charenton, under the direction of the Marquis de Sade, by Peter Weiss, directed by Peter Brook. This was done by the Royal Shakespeare Company, gosh, almost 50 years ago now. It's great. You can see it online. It's free. This version I'm playing for you, this audio version, is a bit longer, and I'm going to play it in parts, but I think it's very inspiring and also very provocative, and I like it enough to pass it on to you. Although if people call in, callers will probably get preference here, and like that. If you want, the first part of it was available, I played on Sunday, my morning show. But again, you can actually see it, and it's much more dramatic and well done as a movie. The same director, the same cast, a just great movie, which is on YouTube. And again, it's called Marat/Saad, the Marat Saad.
Conversation concerning life and death.
I read in your books, Desaad, in one of your immortal works, that the animating force of nature is destruction, and that our only instrument for measuring life is death.
Correct, Marat. But man has given a false importance to death. Every animal, plant, or man that dies adds to nature's compost heap, becomes the manure without which nothing could grow, nothing could be created. Death is simply part of the process. Every death, even the cruelest death, drowns in the total indifference of nature. Nature would watch unmoved if we destroyed the entire human race. I hate nature, this passionless spectator, this unbreakable iceberg face that can bear everything. This goads us to greater and greater acts. But though I hate this goddess, I see that the greatest acts in history have followed her laws. Nature teaches a man to fight for his own happiness. And if he must kill to gain that happiness, why then the murder is natural. Haven't we always crushed down those weaker than ourselves? Haven't we torn at the throats of the powerful with continuous villainy and lust? Haven't we experimented in our laboratories before applying the final solution? Man is a destroyer. But if he kills and takes no pleasure in it, he's a machine. He should destroy with passion, like a man. Let me remind you of the execution of Damien after his unsuccessful attempt to assassinate Louis XV. Remember how Damien died? How gentle the guillotine is compared with his torture. It lasted 4 hours while the crowd goggled and Casanova at an upper window felt under the skirts of the ladies watching. His chest, arms, thighs and calves were slit open. Molten lead they poured into each slit. Boiling oil they poured over him. Burning wax, sulfur. They burnt off his hands. They tied ropes to his arms and to his legs and harnessed him to 4 horses and G'd them up. They pulled at him for an hour, but they'd never done it before and he wouldn't come apart until they sawed through his shoulders and his hips. So he lost the first arm and then the second arm. And he watched what they did to him. And then he turned to us and he shouted out so that everyone could understand. And when he lost the first leg and then the second leg, he still lived. And in the end, he hung there, a bloody torso with a nodding head, just groaning and staring at the crucifix which the father confessor held up to him. That was a festival with which today's festivals can't compete. Even our Inquisition has no meaning nowadays. Now it is all official. We condemn to death without emotion, and there's no singular personal death to be had. Only an anonymous cheapened death that we could dole out to entire nations on a mathematical basis. Until the time comes for all life to be extinguished.
Citizen Marquis, you may sit as a judge on our tribunals. You may have fought with us last September when we dragged out of the jails the aristocrats who were plotting against us. But you still talk like a grand seigneur. And what you call the indifference of nature is your own lack of compassion.
Compassion, Mara, is the property of the privileged classes. When the giver bends to the beggar, he throbs with contempt.
to protect his riches, he pretends to be moved. And his gift to the beggar is no more than a kick. No, no, Mara. No small emotions, please. Your feelings were never petty for you, just as for me. Only the most extreme actions matter.
If I am extreme, I am not extreme in the same way as you. Against nature's silence, I use action. In the vast indifference, I invent a meaning. I don't watch unmoved. I intervene and I say that this and this are wrong, and I work to alter them and improve them. The important thing is to pull yourself up by your own hair, to turn yourself inside out, and see the whole world with fresh eyes.
Mara's liturgy! Remember how it used to be? The kings were our dear fathers under whose care we lived in peace, and their deeds were glorified by official poets. Piously, the simple-minded breadwinners passed on that lesson to their children.
The kings were our dear fathers under whose care we lived in peace. The kings were our dear fathers under whose care we lived in peace.
And the children repeated the lesson. They believed it as anyone believes what they hear over and over again. And over again, the priest said, our love embraces all mankind, of every color, race, and creed. Our love is international, universal. We are all brothers, everyone. And the priest looked down into the pit of injustice, and they turned their faces away, and they said, our kingdom is not as the kingdoms of this world. Our life on earth is but a pilgrimage. The soul lives upon humility and patience. At the same time, screwing from the poor their last centime, they settled down among their treasures and ate and drank with princes, and to the starving they said, suffer! Suffer as he suffered on the cross, for it is the will of God. And anyone believes what they hear over and over again. And so the poor, instead of bread, may do with a picture of the bleeding, scourged, and nailed up Christ, and pray to that image of their helplessness. And the priest said, raise your hands to heaven, bend your knees, bear your suffering without complaint, pray for those who torture you, for prayer and blessing are the only ladders which you can climb to paradise. And so they chained down the poor in their ignorance so that they couldn't stand up and fight their bosses who ruled in the name of the lie of divine right. Monsieur, sir, I must interrupt this argument.
We agreed to make some cuts in this passage. After all, nobody now objects to the church, since our emperor is surrounded by high-ranking clergy, and since it's been proved over and over again that the poor need the spiritual comfort of the priests. There's no question of anyone being oppressed. Quite on the contrary, everything's done to relieve suffering with clothing collections, medical aid, and soup kitchens. And in this very clinic, we're dependent on the goodwill not only of the temporal government, but even more on the goodness and understanding of the church, and particularly of our friend, Monsieur l'Abbé.
If our performance causes aggravation, we hope you'll swallow down your indignation. And please remember that we show only those things that happened long ago. Remember, things were very different then. Of course, today, we're all God-fearing men.
Pray! 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 Oh, pray to him! Our Satan, who art in hell, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come on earth as it is in hell. Forgive us our good deeds and deliver us from holiness. Lead us. Lead us into temptation over and over. Amen. Go! Go!
just seen was unavoidable. Indeed, foreseen by our playwright, who managed to compose these extra lines in case the need arose. Please understand, this man was once the very well thought of abbot of a monastery. It should remind us all that, as they say, God moves like man in a mysterious way.
Before deciding what is wrong and what is right, first we must find out what we are. I do not know myself. No sooner have I discovered something than I begin to doubt it and have to destroy it again. What we do is but a shadow of what we want to do. And the only truths we can point to are the ever-changing truths of our own experience. I don't know if I'm hangman or victim, for I imagine the most horrible tortures, and, as I describe them, I suffer them myself. There is nothing I could not do. And everything fills me with horror. And I see that other people too turn themselves into strangers and are capable of unpredictable acts. A little time ago, I saw my tailor, a gentle, cultured man who liked to talk philosophy. I saw him, foam at the mouth and screaming with rage, attack a man from Switzerland, a large man, heavily armed, and destroy him utterly. And then I saw him tear open the breast of the defeated man, take out the still beating heart, and swallow it.
Oh, this itching.
Mad
this fever.
Animal.
Beats.
Man, a mad animal. I'm 1,000 years old, and in my time I've helped commit 1,000,000 murders. The earth is spread. The earth is spread thick with squashed human guts. We few survivors. We few survivors walk over a quaking bog of corpses, always under our feet, every step we take, rotted bones, ashes, matted hair under our feet, broken teeth, skulls split open. A mad animal. I'm a mad animal. Prisons don't help. Chains don't help. I escape through all the walls, through all the slime and the splintered bones. You'll see it all one day. I'm not through yet. I have plans. Oh, this itching. This itching.
Oh, this itching.
This fever beats in my head like a drum.
My skin's a missing scorches. Come on, dip the cloth in vinegar and water. Cool my forehead.
Mara, I know. You'd give up all your fame and all the love of the people for a few hours of health. You lie there in your bath as if you were in the pink waters of the womb. You swim all huddled up, alone with your ideas about the world, which no longer fit the world outside. And why should you care about the world outside? The only reality is the imagination, the world inside myself. Your revolution no longer interests me.
Wrong, Sard, wrong. The imagination you talk of is useless to me. Imagination cannot break down any real barriers. I write, but I never believe the pen alone can destroy institutions. I know the dangers. However hard I try to fight for the new age, the only time it seems to come any closer is in the moments of quiet between our clumsy battles. We are also clogged with the dead ideas passed on from generation to generation that even the best of us are unable to control our own lives. We invented the revolution, but we didn't know how to run it. Look.
Everyone wants to keep something from the past, a souvenir of the old regime. So this man decides to keep a painting, this man keeps his mistress, this man keeps his horse, this man keeps his garden, this man keeps his farmlands, this man keeps his factories, that man couldn't bear to part with his shipyards, that man keeps his army, and that one keeps his king. And so we sit here and write into the Declaration of the Rights of Man the sanctity of private property. And now we'll see where that leads. Every man is equally free to fight fraternally and with equal arms, of course. Every man his own millionaire. Man against man. Group against group. In happy mutual robbery. And ahead of them, the great springtime of mankind, the budding of trade and the blossoming of industry, and one enormous financial upsurge. And we sit here more oppressed than when we began. And they think the revolution's been won.
The people's reaction!
Why do they have the gold? Why do they have the power? Why? Do they have the fame at the top? Why do they have the jobs at the top? We've got nothing, always had nothing, nothing but holes and millions of them living in holes.
Of its wise ruler's job. Rather than bang an empty drum of protest, citizens be dumb. Work for and trust the powerful few. What's best for them is best for you. Ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to see people and government in harmony. A harmony which, I should say, we've very nearly reached today. And now, nobility meets grace. Our author brings them face to face. The beautiful and brave Charlotte Corday, the handsome Monsieur Duperré. In Caen, where she spent the best years of her youth, in a convent devoted to the way of truth, Duperré's name she heard them recommend as a most sympathetic, helpful friend. Confine your passion to the lady's mind. Your love's platonic, not the other kind.
And that's the second quarter of the Marat Sad, which is it's a play about the inmates of a mental asylum in Napoleonic France in the early 1800s, putting on a play under the direction of the Marquis de Sade, who was actually held in the asylum at Charenton. The Marquis de Sade, of course, is the famous guy who gave us the name Sadist. He was... I think he was jailed for abuses against women. He was also a revolutionary judge for a while. And Marat himself was a revolutionary who was murdered in his bath by a woman named Charlotte Corday. The play kind of speaks for itself, but it has... Well, I think it has a lot to say, but... Anyway, you are tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. I'd hoped to get a call from Gabriel, who called me before the show, and as I mentioned at the very beginning of the show, reported that he had been attacked And I'm going to read what I wrote for Santa Cruz Indie Media. This is a rough draft, but I think it needs to be brought forward. There's going to be some final buffing up of this by Gabriel, who's going to clarify a few things. But this is what I got from my phone call with him. I received a phone call today from a formerly homeless man, now a Cabrillo student. He gave the following report of a beating yesterday near Cabrillo College as he headed for class. Subsequently, he checked in with the Cabrillo Health Clinic, but was reluctant to contact the police, having heard from other formerly homeless people that the police declined to investigate. And in the case of a guy called Zach, whose picture was prominently posted on Facebook, told him that he'd better avoid areas where he's likely to be found. That was the police department's suggestion to Zach in terms of its serve and protect advice, according to Zach. Gabriel reported he could barely see out of one of his eyes and was kicked in a previously injured leg so badly is now oozing pus. He continues to feel woozy a day later. The incident happened around 12:30 p.m. yesterday. There was little pedestrian traffic and tree cover was sort of prevented it from being seen a lot from the road. The four assailants got out of their car and were apparently cruising around looking for people to beat up. They demanded to know where he was from. When he told them he was a student, they became skeptical and demanded to look inside his backpack. He refused, and then they accused him of having something to hide. They then beat him up, but he was able to get away and get to class ultimately to a Cabrillo medical clinic. He didn't call the cops, he said, because of past experiences when homeless about police involving police indifference or hostility. A day later, blood continues to run out of his injured eyes. His hand is fractured, and the 9 months in healing leg injury has been torn apart. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert, it's Red.
Hey, Red, what do you think?
Hey, I want to talk about that new bill that was passed Tuesday.
Oh, the California Homeless Bill of Rights, yeah.
Every person has a right to use public spaces regardless of their housing status.
No, it wasn't. Red, it wasn't passed. It got passed a committee after being weakened. It's now sitting, waiting to go through another committee. But, yeah, it got past one hurdle, for sure.
Yeah, it says it was passed 7-2, huh?
Passed by that committee, but it's
by
not.
By the committee,
yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So now they have to go to what now?
They have to go to the Appropriations Committee, then to the Assembly generally, then to the Senate, then to the Governor.
Oh, shit.
Down
the line,
you're right, it is important because it does involve the right of homeless people to be in public spaces, the right, for example, to sleep in your vehicle, the right...
How is that bothering somebody, you know? If you parked out of the way and sleep in your vehicle, I mean, it's your home, right?
Well, have you been bothered recently yourself? I know we've talked about to you and Crow recently. You guys are still living in Watsonville in your vehicle, right?
Yeah, but we were in Capitola, and we got two camping tickets because I had just gotten out of a hospital, the emergency ward, and we went outside and parked outside the Target. We're waiting for it to open because we're going to check out the price of the generator to get a generator for the RV, and we were waiting. It's going to open up in about 20 minutes, and this call came by, and we were just half laying in the back, and he was rubbing my back because I had, like, some pneumonia and arthritis had set in, and he was rubbing my back, and he gave us tickets for being asleep.
Illegal back rubbing, I guess, huh?
Yeah, I guess so. It says here, though, that it's also going to include a right to an attorney during court proceedings to involve minor offenses.
Yeah, we're talking about the bill at the current stage, and I encourage people to support it. I was going to actually talk about that. Did you want to talk about it yourself? You can if you'd like.
How long do you think all this build out there will take?
Well, it's a good question. There's no assurance that it'll go anywhere near being passed, actually. But
yeah,
here's what they did. They removed from the bill protections for the homeless against discrimination by businesses, protection for the homeless by discrimination in housing, and protection for the homeless by discrimination in some third area. I think, oh yeah, life-sustaining behavior. They removed that part. It was described by newspapers as the right to piss or the right to pee. And actually what it is a requirement that cities, you know, either put in public facilities or stop harassing people for doing what they need to do.
Yeah, so here too that they were going to work on making hygiene ports where people could shower and use the bathroom 24 hours a day. Now that's a good idea, man. I think it's hard to find a place to shower. You have to lock yourself in the bathroom at Burger King and try to stick your head under the faucet. Yeah,
right. No, right on. Right. That's true enough. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty hard.
I'm looking at an. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm still going through the cancer and through the brittle bone thing that I have. It's turned into arthritis in both my wrists, so I can hardly use hands now. It's advancing, and so we weren't all healthy. You know, we're drinking it, but like orange juice and grapefruit juice. And eating a lot of fruits and vegetables and stuff. We weren't totally healthy.
Well, I know that's one recommendation, you know, for dealing with cancer. If you're not going to do conventional radiation or chemotherapy, it's, you know, diet is the recommendation that the, you know, people like Keith McHenry, who's a, you know, a vegan guy from way back, proposes with Food Not Bombs. Regarding the bill, though, you know, I'm going to go back to that if that's okay.
Sure.
I'm looking at this article, which I guess comes out of the Sacramento Bee, in the sense that with legislation was being considered in Sacramento, it's a good place to take a look. Sacramento Bee says the bill is partly a reaction to ordinances passed in recent years by cities concerned about the number of people in the streets. In other words, get rid of the riffraff. They aren't saying that. But San Francisco, Los Angeles, Santa Cruz, and Palo Alto are among the municipalities that ban people from sitting and lying on the streets and sidewalks. And, of course, the courts have overturned that in Los Angeles.
And yeah. We went through all that. We were all getting arrested when we did that at the courthouse, remember? Yeah. So I'm happy to see somebody is finally starting to stand up for a senator. Somebody's recognizing the fact that we're human, too. We're just in a lost place and no way to get back up on our feet. And then if people live in RVs and stuff, you know, it's cool and stuff, but that's our home. Even though it's on wheels, it's a house.
Here. Yeah, no, I hear you, Red. Listen, thanks for calling in. Anything final?
Just keep up the good work and keep me informed, good. And I'll keep up with you and let you know what's going on.
All right.
If there's any rallies or anything going on because of this, you know, to celebrate or bring it more to more attention, please give me a call. Okay?
What I do is I put out email. Do you get email?
Yeah, through Crow's email. Yeah.
Okay, because that's where it comes out, or through the radio. That's the primary ways that I, you know, put out information. But yeah, we'll do it that way. Thank you, Red, and good luck with, you know, the advancing cancer and arthritis.
Sure, I know. It's starting in the liver. It came to the liver, and there ain't nothing you can do. You can't operate it on it because you bleed to death, and you can't get a new one.
So,
and you can't take it out, and so you're stuck with it.
I hear you, Red. Thank you, babe.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the bill, the California Homeless Bill of Rights, prohibits police from enforcing ordinances on resting in public places unless a county has provided sufficient support to homeless people, includes the right to an attorney during court proceedings that involve minor offenses. In Santa Cruz, you can't get an attorney unless you are charged with a misdemeanor. As we heard earlier, some people are so desperate to get off the streets, they will be happy to go into jail, as we heard from Barbara, the 70-year-old woman I played the account of earlier. I only have about 7 minutes left in the show, so I'm not going to go into the more of the details of the amended California Homeless Bill of Rights. I'll try to talk about that on Sunday when I come back at 9:30, if that show happens, which it's likely to. I do want to say that there is a video done by Brent Adams recently documenting what appears to be negligent or abusive behavior by Officer Vasquez. It actually got into the Sentinel, and good for Brent for doing this. Brent was around 1 o'clock in the morning. He was videoing Officer Vasquez dealing with two drunks who were sitting on a bench. They were just sitting there, but Vasquez decided he wanted to put them in jail or put them in a hospital. He wanted to get, you know, it's hard to second guess him there. And usually I would say, you know, I'm glad the less police are involved, the better. But what he did with one of these drunks, or one of these drunken individuals, who's a guy, his name is Richard Hardy. He was having trouble putting him in the squad car because Hardy was objecting and banging against the squad car from the outside. He spun him around and apparently slammed him down into the sidewalk face first, which resulted in significant injuries. I think he's been released from Dominican recently, which may mean that he's in better shape, or it may not. I tried to call him there yesterday, and I was told he was in stable condition, but I wasn't able to reach him by phone. But this video is a very shocking video, which the Sentinel, surprisingly, put up in a story online, I believe it was today or yesterday, which you can find. I'm going to see if I can find it here. And we have... I guess it was, let's see here, looking around, hard to find, but it's worth looking at. Go on the Sentinel and look for, I guess, I don't think they had his name in this. He was, and I don't think they had Officer Vasquez's name. Although it's mentioned in Brent's video, which is a very temperate video, and one which documents exactly what needs to be documented, how police are acting in Santa Cruz. Here it is. Homeless man injured during arrest in downtown Santa Cruz. A story by Stephen Baxter in the Sentinel Online. And I recommend people take a look at it. And the video... This is the kind of thing that might change how the police operate, or at least alert citizens to protest this kind of behavior. There's also a lot of dialogue about it, mostly from trolls who are, well, people who think the police can do no wrong and want to see the homeless run out of town. And but it's worth looking at. I was also reading, and I guess I'm really not going to have enough time to really finish, but I will be posting this report of an anti-homeless beating. He describes the attackers as emerging from a gray four-door pickup truck. This is, again, Gabriel, happening yesterday near Cabrillo College around noon, wearing checkered shirts, jeans, baseball bats, one with blonde hair, one with black hair, 5 days stubble on one, the rest generally clean-shaven. Between the ages of 18 and 30, he estimates, another woman had straight black hair. The rest had buzz cuts. He suggested they were East Side local affiliated. As someone who is still in touch with old homeless friends and following recent assaults on Sam, I am, and Zach on Facebook and through other friends, he says the situation has escalated significantly since the massive, officially orchestrated ceremonies for the Butler Baker deaths out in. And he reported stopping to speak with hitchhikers leaving town, four of them in a group at the Ocean Street entrance to Highway 1 South. He said it was unusual to see such a large group hitching together, since that makes hitching, getting a ride harder. They told him they'd been stopped on Pacific Avenue by thugs who knocked off their hats. The thugs then opened their backpacks, spilled up contents on the ground, and threw them in the garbage from which they ultimately retrieved their stuff. It's all garbage and belongs in the garbage, said the thugs, followed by get out of town. pretty serious stuff, and again, it suggests that people need to get together and arm themselves with cell phones, cameras, companions, sleeping in visible places, getting receipts from the homeless lack of services center so they can at least fight sleeping tickets, and that's a good way to begin. It sounds like I have a someone is trying to crash in from the door here, so I'm going to open the door and say goodnight to you all, and get in touch off air if you'd like. 423-4833 is the number to call. That's the number I'll be receiving messages at if you've got any more reports of any assaults or any updates. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides.
And you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.3 FM. Uncle Dennis here in the glorious basement studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz on a Thursday night. And mostly everything seems normal, but you never know. Life could be doing strange things. Name of the show is From the Cream to the Dregs, and we explore the music of the 60s and 70s and beyond, rock and roll, psychedelic, and blues music. If you want the, if you want folk rock or rockabilly or anything else like that, you're going to have to find another show. Coming up in just a few minutes, we'll figure out what the brew of the week is, and then at 9 o'clock we'll do the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use, and hopefully the pencil and paper you have will help you out getting... then around 10 o'clock, we'll do the Ultimate Vinyl Hour, which involves an actual vinyl record played on a real turntable with a needle, analog music from the last century for your listening entertainment here. And meanwhile, we've got some classic Steppenwolf for you.
the noble weed, you need much more than him. You've been telling lies so long, some believe they're true. So they close their eyes to things you have no right to do. Just as soon as you are gone, hope will start to climb. Please don't stay around too long, you're wasting precious time.
Get out!